Shalom liyudim, shalom lebnei noach, shalom legoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Yud Zayin b'chodesh Iyar, parashas b'chukosai, the 31st day of the Omer, Tavshin Ayin Tes, 5779, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 21 May 2019. Webcasting from the most interesting country and people in the world. Most fascinating. For example, I find fascinating how one of the most honest players here are the Arabs, for whom having Jerusalem as the capital of their state of Palestine tells us that in their heads, this is a psychological religious conflict, not a nationalist one. Yesterday, the United States, led by those two famous experts on Arabs and Islam, Jared Kushner and Jason Greenblatt, announced that on January 25 in Bahrain, lots of countries and experts, I guess corporations, will convene to discuss a whopping boost to the economy of the Palestinians, apparently in the belief that they can be enticed with money to reconcile themselves to an inferior political status subservient to Al-Yahud, the Jews. Probably, given Greenblatt's age, his first memory of Israel at war was the first Lebanon War of 1982. Kushner is even younger, so neither of them remember a time when not one word was said about any Palestinians with the identical right to a state in Eretz Yisrael. They never knew a news cycle without any reference to Palestinians as the victims of Zionism, the real victims of the concerted Arab League aggression against tiny Israel to destroy the state of the Jews. They can't remember the conflict here when there never were any Palestinians as a party to the violence. As businessmen, as millionaires, they believe that a big enough monetary enticement can be offered if enough governments and business interests all pitch in and offer the ancient ones a huge sum of money, if they will only surrender their wish for an independent state with Al-Quds as its capital. Which is why I believe, I'm open to being proven wrong later on, that the deal of the century will join a long list of peace plans offered to the ancient ones they never accepted. This is what they're saying today anyway, so it's not so far-fetched. And I believe they speak the truth. They tell us this is a religious conflict. They must have Jerusalem and deny it to the Jews. This is not an economic conflict solvable with cash. Today, one of their gangster leaders, Ahmed Bajdalani, said, quote, "There will be no Palestinian participation in the Manama, capital of a brain, workshop. Any Palestinian who would take part would be nothing but a collaborator for the Americans and Israel." Close quote. How strange that some might call yours truly a far-right right-winger for my opposition to peace plans with the so-called Palestinians, when I think that I show more respect to these people than the left. I take them at their word. The left doesn't. I listen to them. Palestinian Media Watch does a voluminous job recording and translating what's in the media in Arab Judea and Samaria. And these people are as hateful and crazy in their heads about Jews as any deranged Jew hater in our history, even Nazi-like. How curious that it is the peace camp, preening itself on its sympathy and compassion for the victims of their grandparents' Zionism, that is furthest this camp from truly empathizing with the Arabs and seeing the world through their eyes. I've made the observation before that there are different styles and fashions in Jew hatred. It's full-blown psychopathy in the West to deny the Holocaust, and like a Roger Waters, see in Israel the worst offender of human rights in the world. This is, in the vernacular, cuckoo, versus the Jew hatred of those Muslim women in the U.S. Congress, who grew up in a culture, society, where fantasies of Jewish evil are perfectly normal. Ayin Hirsi Ali said that in Saudi Arabia, where there are no Jews, every mishap is the fault of the Jews. In that culture, the Jews are like the jinn, these folkloric spirits, like creatures who will populate Halloween, those relics of pre-Christian pagan religion in Europe. With Arabs, we're dealing with a very different mental universe. In a way, we are fortunate to be able, so to speak, to observe them, to look back in time, so to speak, to an earlier age in human development. Ishmael, was expelled from his civilized father's civilized encampment of perhaps a few thousand followers of Avraham and his no less remarkable, impressive wife Sarah. Ishmael, the Chumash tells us, when expelled, went off to live in the desert with his bow and arrow, instruments of killing. And over the next more than 2,000 years of Jewish history, Ishmael and his seed remained nomadic, desert dwellers, resistant to joining permanent settlements of people that must of necessity live according to an accepted code of ethics called laws. For thousands of years, Ishmael produced an outlaw society that would not settle down. Not until the Quran was written, probably by Jewish scribes in the late 7th Christian century, did the Arabs have a written language. The Quran was the first book in Arabic. By contrast, we had been given our first book, the five books at Mount Sinai, in the year 1313, before the Common Era. Then the canon of the Tanakh, our Bible, would be closed roughly 1,000 years later, containing 1,000 years of Jewish history in this country. And then another 1,000 years would pass, during which the Mishnah and Talmud were written, the latter in Hebrew and Aramaic, with loan words from Latin, Greek, Persian. All of this before Muhammad, the head chapter, was born. And when he was born, the Arabs were still illiterate in their own language. In sum, they were way behind us at birth and remain way behind us today in their thinking. So I'm betting that a month from now, when another set of many dozens of countries and factors wanting the prestige of having a hand in the fate of the Holy Land, when they will convene in Bahrain, they will make decisions after which the locals here will reject them. They will reject whatever they offer, because it will not be what they're most clear about wanting. They must have Jerusalem as their capital, and since that is not likely to be in the deal of the century, they will reject the deal of the century, as it's called. I suspect Kushner and Greenblatt inhabit a liberal society in which the Palestinians are a priori just like other nations, whose leaders want the best for their people and their material well-being. But I, of course, reject that illusion on which that aspiration rests. Kushner and Greenblatt act as if there really is a Palestinian people, a corporate body with a unique national identity that functions as any unified nation. I reject that because for a quarter century since 1993, the Arabs in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza have been split between Fatah and Hamas. Neither community acts for the benefit of the whole, only for its own affinity group. There never was a Palestinian nationality in history, and there's no such corporate body in the present either, even though the world continues to treat them as such. The Arab Muslims west of the Jordan are the same people as those on the eastern bank. For that matter, they are the same as the Arabs in the modern state of Syria. And how do we know this? Because for the better part of 14 centuries, there, before there were modern states such as Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and Israel, the Arabs themselves called the whole region Syria. They saw and made no distinctions, no national distinctions, between people, for example, the Arabs living in the south, in Hebron, and the Arabs in the north of modern Syria, in Aleppo. It was all Syria broken up only after the First World War into these new entities. Ergo, it would be moral and lawful if the Arabs west of the Jordan were asked, ordered, as Truman, Churchill, and Stalin ordered millions of Germans living in various European countries after World War II to leave their homes and go live in the new truncated Germany. It would be moral and lawful to tell the Arabs in Judea and Samaria to move across the river. They will still be in historic Syria, even still in eastern Palestine. Likewise, in order to create the modern state of India in 1947, parts of India, as was then seen, were separated in order to create a West and East Pakistan, as a result of which tens of millions of Muslims and Hindus on the subcontinent, who found themselves a minority under the new arrangements, uprooted themselves and became refugees and went to live with their fellow Hindus or Muslims. Israel has the right to ask all the Arabs in Judea and Samaria to leave. Not that this is a realistic demand. I'm speaking of rights. I want annexation, citizenship for Christians, and resident alien status for Muslims. Trump's deal of the century, I suspect, will treat the violence here against us as a material problem solvable by material means, and I disagree. This is a psychological conflict, and especially so if we remember that the word psychology derives ultimately from the Greek word for soul, psyche, psuche. This is a religious war. No different from the age of the Crusades. No different except for the material dimension. Islamic history is a record of conquest and unspeakable cruelty to its victims, and as a religious culture, it licenses itself to overrun and exterminate all rival cultures and religions. These are not Abrahamic people in the least. I opened today with the observation that this is the most interesting, even fascinating country in the world, and ran my mind around the most bizarre reality in which the Arabs, the Muslims, tell you what they want, only no one is listening. And people keep offering them what they have no interest in. And another fascinating face of the Jewish people is the shameless quotient among them who identify with Israel's enemies and slander this people accordingly constantly. Last webcast, we talked about Germany's Bundestag last Friday, calling the BDS cult an anti-Semitic operation. And predictably, several score Jewish academics in Israel and the exile had been lobbying Germany not to vote on that motion because, well, these academics believe Israel is guilty and it's right to point the finger of accusation at it for its racist, fascist, colonialist occupation of ancient Philistia. So there's nothing wrong in calling on all good people to boycott this apartheid society for its theft of Palestine from the Palestinians and its ceaseless oppression and persecution of them. Israel is a chronic violator of the human rights of the Palestinians. That's how these 56 Jewish signatories see things in a letter protesting the decision of the Bundestag to call critics of Israel anti-Semites, when these critics, they believe, are in fact offenders of the victims of Zionism that the UN once called a form of racism. Jews like these, in my eyes, are like zombies. They're hypnotized by a vision of the people they were born into as bigoted, cliquish, cruel, clannish. And since they're all academics and literate, they have the intellectual ability, if not the spiritual resources, to understand that in every generation, Jews are vilified for terrible beliefs and behaviors that never have any truth to them. And in our generation, post the era of deicide, for which millions of Jews suffered for 2,000 years, today our satanic sin is stealing an entire country from an entire people and then refusing to return it to its rightful owners and continuing to oppress the rightful owners and embitter their lives with injustice. I reason that common to all these Jew-bashing Jews in academe, there's an unresolved hostility to a parent, maybe both parents, without whom the academic would not have been born into this obnoxious people in his eyes. Jews who think as they do, of course, refer to Israel's, quote, occupation of the West Bank, that was in their letter, when it's so easy to defend our presence in Judea and Samaria. Eminent jurists have done that and have been doing that since 1967. It's not rocket science. The case for Jewish ownership in Judea and Samaria, contested by Palestinians, could not be simpler. All the paperwork of the League of Nations pertaining to this country said nothing of any Palestinian nation with rights here versus the Jewish people whose ancient homeland is explicitly referenced in the League's mandate for Palestine. And as I discovered in my research, there was no mention of any Palestinians when the partition plan was drafted in 1947. That was by the UN, the successor organization to the League. In a word, people calling themselves the Palestinians have no standing in the disposition of this territory. They were never a party to the conflict. The term Palestinians only begins to appear in UN resolutions in 1970. And I find it fascinating that the Jewish people breeds such renegades who identify with our mortal enemy and his lies. Something blocks these people from normal human self-defense, from a healthy self-love for oneself, one's community and nation. They are spiritual soulmates of Jeremy Corbyn, who just like them is infamous for rejecting the internationally accepted definition of anti-Semitism and its prohibition on likening Israel to Nazi Germany. These anti-Jew Jews fear losing the right to bash Israel because Israel is a malefactor, the bad guy, in its abuse of the indigenous third world non-Caucasian Palestinians. I think it was Churchill, sounds like Churchill, who said a liberal is someone who in an argument cannot take his own side. I think such people in our time are afraid of being called selfish, caring only about their own side And this is because these people are the most selfish in politics today. Case in point, the Democrats, led by Nancy Pelosi, who want all refugees to be accepted. Building a wall, she said, is not who we are. It's not who she is. Her self-image as Mother Teresa is more important to her than the threat to her neighbors of being raped and murdered by illegal aliens. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. And now for some unpleasant, dare we say bad news, two items actually related. It seems the Knesset's Director General, Albert Shacharovich, has acceded to the request of the Sodomite faction in the Knesset to register the partners of said MKs, new MKs in the Knesset, who proudly advertise their mental disorder, to register their partners as a normal spouse, entitled to all the perks of an MK's spouse. Wynet reported that when a new MK, of course in the post-religious blue and white faction, former mayor of post-religious Anana, Eitan Ginsburg, was asked to sign a form during orientation asking if he had a common law spouse, he saw this as implying that a family unit meant man and woman, and he thus refused to sign. Tamar Zandberg of the Post-Jewish Merits Party took up the cause, and now the Knesset will recognize a same-sex partner as a normal spouse. Knesset Director General Shacharovich said that the Knesset represents Israeli society, and the Knesset should reflect that. There are five like this now. I hope other MKs take issue with this. It is also an abomination that Eitan Ginsburg and his partner in perverse sexuality have been parenting two children, which I deem a form of child abuse. I know a young woman who works in a Tel Aviv daycare center, and she sees a difference in the boys who are brought to school in the morning by two men and other boys who come from normal families. These boys are starved for her maternal presence and affection. And then in the second news item, likewise, the IDF has decided to change a form to be filled out by recruits regarding parents, mother, and father. Those two titles are being now replaced by Parent 1 and Parent 2. Expect protests from those who reject this unilateral decision arrived at by the IDF, and start worrying when this news item hints at the likelihood that this totally un-Jewish phenomenon is growing in Israel. And I would be remiss if I did not report that in my month in the States this year, I noticed the growing uncritical acceptance of this behavior. Case in point, the current candidacy of the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, parading his husband in public, who, of course, he, Buttigieg, also supports the right of women to give birth to a baby and then kill it. They are both these stories. Unbridled homosexuality and intrauterine infanticide, symptoms of a degenerate society. Degenerate being the perfect word for this situation. It is a fact that the U.S. is now going the way of Western Europe. It is not reproducing. It's not producing the next generation. It's also depressing to watch Fox TV seem to crumble, barring certain commentators, and broadcasting perhaps what is not shown in the States. Whenever they go to a commercial there, they insert a short subject for overseas and occasionally a promo for the best vacation spots for the LGBT whatever community. Best place for gays to go on vacation. I consider no less the resistance by the Democrats to stopping the massive invasion of foreigners in the same category. These foreigners who shamelessly, the moment they enter the U.S. territory, commit a crime. This, too, is real social pathology. One would think that the Democrats would at least share the patriotic Republican concern for the safety of the people and a desire to stop the invasion, but they do not. And in a related symptom, these same Americans in various cities have declared a form of sedition, of civil war, of separation, seizing from the national government the power to control immigration, with their sanctuary cities that are turning themselves rapidly into slums. So I find it depressing that the Knesset, as of this moment, shows more signs of this degenerate trend, this blessing of sexual disorder, which comes in various guises, sexual disorder in society. This is not a good thing. Okay, the website is slowly being brought back to health, and that's it for this webcast. I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.